Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now part of the Believe Network. Joining me is my co-host, Stephen Kearse, 65 plus years in sports journalism. Between the two of us, you got to believe in us because we have been doing this for a long time. Later in the show, was the Nico Collins contract good or bad? And is the Astros season over yet? But Stephen, let's start with the Rockets' latest trade rumors. They've reportedly been in trade talks with the Nets and the Grizzlies for the third pick. And I've said it, and I'll say it over and over again, it's just highly unlikely they keep that pick.
I'd have to say I agree with you, Robert, because I keep looking for a scenario where they really need to keep the pick. And obviously, if this were a really deep draft and the Rockets had a need that they thought they could fill right away by getting a player of that, you know, that high of a draft pick, then obviously you go for it. But in a year of uncertainty, in a draft year of uncertainty, I just think it would be more advantageous to trade the pick. Now, you know, then the question becomes, you know, because I think if you're going to trade it, you want to get a main piece back of a player where they really do need a player right now. You can get some other draft picks in the future, sure, but I don't think that's what the Rockets' greatest need is.
Yeah, it's also going to depend on how uncomfortable do you want to get with what you're going to give up, because this draft is so bad, I don't feel like the number three pick is going to get you a starter. And that leads me right into this, Stephen, because I want to throw three potential trade ideas for the pick. And I've been working at it nonstop for the last few days, Stephen.
It's along with everybody else. Everybody else in the media sure has too.
I'm stumped on what the Grizzlies would be willing to give up to move up, because, you know, I just said they're interested. But my number one idea is Mikal Bridges and the Nets. And, you know, those rumors just won't go away. So that's why I'm going with that as my number one. And it makes the most sense, of course, with the state of their franchise. His price has gone down because now there's just 2 years left on that great value contract, 23 and 25 million the next 2 years. If the Rockets get Bridges, you don't need Dylan Brooks. So I would just use Bridges to match money, but send him to a third team who could give Brooklyn more draft capital. So Stephen, the Nets, in my scenario, they get Dylan Brooks, that draft capital, I mean, the number three pick and next year's probable swap. And I just give up the rights to your pick next year instead of negating the swap. That way the Nets don't know if we're going to finish better or worse than that. You just never know what's going to happen with injuries. So that eliminates that. So they basically take our pick next year, and it's two high lottery picks with whatever Dylan brings along the side. So Stephen, I think that's fair for Bridges, despite how delusional the Nets have been on this seemingly.
Yeah. I mean, I've been hearing these rumors off and on. This is probably the biggest one, that it's like you keep coming back to it when you hear other trade scenarios. I mean, if I were the Nets, I would make that deal. And because here's the thing, you know, Mikal Bridges is not a number one guy. And, you know, the Rockets don't need a number one guy. And not, he may or may not be a number two type of player.
Three at best, right.
And for the Rockets, I mean, that may be okay. But again, it depends on what else they're going to give up for him. You know, trading that pick, certainly, and maybe even addressing the other picks that you got from the Nets. It'd be kind of ironic that you give some of those picks back to them that you got from the James Harden deal. But, you know, of all the trade scenarios, Robert, I've heard, and of course, I haven't heard your other two yet, that one just makes the most sense to me, because I think it would address a number of needs for the Rockets, and it would certainly help the Nets in what they're trying to do, whatever it is they're trying to do. So that one sounds like the most likely scenario, if that's indeed what's going to happen.
Yeah, the Memphis Grizzlies want something. I just couldn't find anybody that I would have been really excited from their roster that I feel like they would have been willing to give up. So maybe there's a three-team deal. The reason they're discussing that with the Rockets on the third pick, but I don't know. I just went with like the basic Nets trade. My second trade idea, this is swapping picks with the Bulls at three for their 11th pick and Alex Caruso. The Bulls would also get Jayshon Tate. Caruso's on an expiring deal, so you'd want to maybe extend him to make it worthwhile. I think you have to if you want to make it worthwhile. Caruso can't be more like what Udoka likes. He's an Udoka player. He extends the bench. He's got a championship ring. We know about his defense. Yeah, it's legit shooting, little ball handling as well. And Steven, I just can't imagine the Bulls keeping him beyond this year. I doubt they find a better offer too, because I mean, this team is going nowhere.
Well, that's true. And getting a number three pick, regardless of what kind of a draft it may be, that may be just what the Bulls need. You know, you talked about Caruso being an Udoka player. You know, that's another thing about Bridges. He's an Udoka type player too. So either one of those guys, and yeah, Caruso, in a normal year, if it were a better draft, I certainly don't think I would give up a number three pick for someone like him. But in this scenario, that would make more sense because, again, it's, you know, the Rockets don't necessarily need a number three pick with the way this draft is. So that might be a scenario they would look at. And for the Bulls, it certainly gives them some advantage. And yeah, I don't know, you know, Jayshon Tate and, you know, maybe one other player. I mean, I just don't see the Rockets keeping Tate anywhere, him coming back next year to begin with. So it wouldn't be as big of a loss for the Rockets, I don't think, especially if you're getting a player like Caruso in there.
Yeah, Tate right now is not in the rotation. And also he's a guy that you can just let go if you want to save the money, or he's a guy that you can trade at the trade deadline and maybe get something for him down the road too if you're somebody like the Bulls.
Well, would you throw Jock Landale in that deal, by the way?
It just doesn't work money-wise. But yeah, Landale, he's going to be part of some discussed packages because of the contract. Him and Jayshon Tate, you can just let him go this offseason, and basically people get salary cap space back. And I'll go ahead and get to it with the next offer, because this is maybe the craziest idea that I've got. I'm going to swap the 3 for the 14 with Portland. So now they have 2 picks in the top 7, Portland does. And I take a shot on Anfernee Simons. He's 6'3", averaged over 20 points the last 2 years, 38% three-point shooter. His defense is wonky, and that's the one reticent part about it for me, but Udoka can work with him potentially. And he's only 25. He's got 2 years left on his deal at 25 and 27. So not absorbent for what you're getting back offensively. And why would the Blazers do this? Well, they got Scoot and Shaedon Sharpe as a young backcourt that they're trying to develop. Anfernee's missed a lot of time with injuries, which is what scares me a little bit about making that deal, but you're not, I just don't think you're giving up a ton there. And then the Blazers are also rumored to want to move up for Klingon. And Steven, I've heard the idea thrown out for swapping the Blazers number 7 for the Rockets number 3 and getting back Malcolm Brogdon, but why not get the younger asset in his prime like Simons? And Brogdon, you know, he's going to be 32 next season,
right?
But you might package some of those guys, that the expiring contracts, the guys we're just talking about, to make this type of deal, Steven.
Well, that is honestly the most intriguing pick of the 3 that you've gotten. And I don't know if it's really as crazy as you think it sounds, Robert, because if you think about it, I don't know that Klingon would be available after 3. If that's the guy that Portland is eyeing, it would make sense to move up to number 3. And again, depending on what number 1 and number 2, where they go, they would certainly be in a better spot to pick him, because if that's the guy they want, I don't know that he would be available at 7. And from the Rockets' standpoint, I know as much as they need defense, the shooting is really, I just feel like that is the biggest need this team has right now. And when you're looking at those stats, you know, especially 38% three-point shooting, you know, that is something I'd be willing to take a chance on. And yeah, you're running an injury risk with his history, but he is a younger guy. And Udoka seems to, you know, sometimes you can work some magic with some of these guys and getting him to buy in to his defensive system and why it's important. So I don't know, you know, if I think about it, that may be the best scenario trade the Rockets could make, because if you're talking about meeting all those needs at once, that might just about do it for them.
Yeah, Caruso, Bridges, and Simons, all of them are above average to, you know, some of them are even really good three-point shooters. So,
for shooters, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just an idea. I mean, what do you Rockets fans think they should do with the pick? Do you like these trades? Do you have your own trade ideas? Let's see them in the comments. And if you like what we do on a regular basis with this show, give us a thumbs up on YouTube on some of our videos and share our content with your friends. And Steven, right after we finished recording last week's show, that Nico Collins extension came out. Just kind of bad timing, I guess you might say, but might as well get into some quick thoughts on that. And let me ask you this. Nico got a 3-year extension worth $24 million per season. Is it a good or bad deal? He's now, by the way, Steven, the 9th highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, although this will change next year when his extension kicks in and some other guys are starting to get extensions as well the next year. So I don't think he's going to stay the 9th. It's going to drop some.
Well, it is, Robert. And I don't know, you know, how you feel about this, but for me, that actually sounds like it seemed to be a lower deal than I was kind of expecting him to get. Because, you know, of the year he had this last year. But here's my thinking on this, Robert. I just, you know, I am one who needs to see more than 1 year, a sample size, to make sure this guy really is a legitimate number one receiver. Yes, he had a great year. There's no doubt about that. But, and sometimes it just takes a while for guys to develop. But I would have liked to see him put 2 really good years like that together before I'm going to go, hey, let's do this. But I don't know. It just doesn't, I guess, because of all the other contracts that you're handed out, 3 years, $24 million, it just doesn't sound a whole lot to me when you're talking about being a number one receiver and the fact that right now he'd be the ninth highest. It's not like he's one of the top three highest picks or receivers. But honestly, I think the Texans were in a position where they really needed to do this as much for hoping that Collins will have another good year or two or three, just because there are still question marks at the wide receiver spot, because you don't know what's going to happen beyond this season, this next season, with Stephon Diggs. You know, is he still going to be here? Is he going to leave? And some of the other guys and how they're going to turn out. You hope that Tank Dell will come back strong. He's had a lot of adversity. So with those question marks, I mean, I think it's a smart thing to do for the Texans, because where else are you going to go if you don't give him some kind of extension, especially beyond next season when Diggs may or may not be here and there may be other question marks by then?
Yeah, my question marks with Nico ended last year because I really liked what I saw before last year, despite the numbers, because I knew who was throwing him the ball. But it wasn't just the fact that he had a great year. You know, it's the fact that, you know, he was just doing everything that you would want from your wide receiver position. And he's going into his prime years. And another key part to this whole situation, it was only a dead cap hit of $8.5 million in 2026 and $4 million in 27. So if it's a disaster after 25, if the injuries that we all worry about just all of a sudden are like rampant or something like that, you can get out pretty good after 25. And I definitely thought, you know, he deserved top 10 money. He was top 10 in most key stats last year. And with Diggs only being 1 year guaranteed, like you said, Stephen, I breathed a sigh of relief to get Nico locked in for, you know, Stroud. You know, Stroud needs that guy. And Stephen Stroud called Nico in his presser today a generational talent.
Well, that's why I was saying that I think for the Texans, it was a great deal, because I would have thought Nico would want more than that. You know, that maybe he'd want to be a top five. That doesn't mean he is a top five, but that's why I think the Texans did come out smelling like a rose for this deal, not just financially, but yeah, they've got the guy locked up for 3 years. You know, at the end of say two, if he has regressed or, you know, suddenly become injury prone. You know, and the other thing too, Robert, is not only does he have CJ Stroud, but who's to say that Stephon Diggs, you know, that he might learn a thing or two from a guy like Stephon Diggs, maybe not so much, you know, in personality, but just in the way he runs routes and the, you know, the way he does things on the field, maybe he can learn a few things. And having Stephon Diggs there, at least for this coming season, having a guy like that around him might even make him have an even better season.
Yeah. Funny you bring up Diggs. Speaking of him, I got some quick Texan day one minicamp headlines. And he said, Diggs did, that coming to the Texans is a quote unquote breath of fresh air. But he said good things about Josh Allen and his time in Buffalo. So handled things really classy in that press conference. The first time we really heard from Diggs with the Texans. Tank Dell said the shooting changed his perspective and he's learned he needs to hang around the right people. So the message definitely was clear there. D'Amico said Titus and Tunsil are on pace to be back for training camp after their surgeries. That was good to hear. And D'Amico also said Mechie looked improved and quote unquote explosive. So Steven, nothing but positives.
Well, of course, you know, you're going to hear nothing but positives coming out of those kind of press conferences and, you know, especially with minicamp here, but I mean, what else would you want to hear? And that's certainly, you hope that most, if not all of those scenarios come to pass. And you're talking about John Mechie with the wide receivers. I mean, that's another question mark, you know, can John really put it together? Because if he can, that's just going to add even better depth at that position. You know, with Tank Dell, I mean, it does underscore the fact, you know, even though, you know, he was not involved directly with what happened with the shooting, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He thought he was trying to get away from it and ended up, you know, running the wrong direction, I guess, and getting toward it. And he's fortunate that, you know, he only got hit in the leg and that it was, you know, such a short recovery time for him. But it does underscore the fact that, you know, where a lot of these kids come from, and then you go back home, I mean, it's very difficult not to hang around the old hood and some of the friends that you used to hang out with that may or may not have been, you know, the best friends in the world to have. So it's just good that Tank Dell survived that and came back from that the way he did. And let me say one other thing about Diggs. You know, one of the other things I've heard is, you know, he and CJ have been working very closely together, and that apparently, according to Stroud, that Diggs has been giving him some pointers too on things that Josh Allen did. So I think, you know, CJ Stroud can only learn from these guys, and having them on the team, as much as, you know, for the Texans, I think it's just as good for Stroud.
Yeah. Going back to Tank Dell and what you were saying, CJ Stroud actually said in an interview or on a podcast, I believe this past week, that you know, it's one thing that he had to do in the last year is guys that he knew were texting him or asking him, are you going to get more than a half yard this week rushing, which, you know, tells you that, you know, what they're trying to do and what that's all about. And he just basically said, I had to just cut people off. He's, you know, it's tough for those guys. I mean, you're friends with these people and then everybody starts acting differently as soon as you're big. I mean, I am not familiar with it, Stephen. I know you're a big shot, but this is all new to me.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a shot. That's for sure. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's always those that when you see somebody, you know, have success. I mean, Robert, you and I, look, if we say we see somebody on television or maybe, you know, it's an athlete like we can brag about maybe we met Kenny Burrow and Robert Brazil because I actually did meet them one time. You know, you can brag to other people. Hey, I met so-and-so and, you know, he shook my hand or he gave me an autographed bat. I mean, it's one of those things. And, you know, with these guys, especially if they've known them before they became big. Yeah, it's awfully tough because then they just think that they can give them anything they want. And I mean, it's like the guys who make the Super Bowl all of a sudden hear from guys they haven't heard from in 10, 20 years wanting tickets. So it's, yeah, you know, those things, I think you just sometimes just have to let go of that.
All right. Quick reminder, if you're a diehard Houston sports fan, I assume you are because you're listening to me and Steven, go back and listen to our last show with iconic Houston sports writer Mickey Herskowitz. If you're under 40, maybe you don't know his name, but trust me, it's worth the time. I put history on the thumbnail, Houston sports history stories for 50 years. And apparently that scared everybody because everybody thought they were going back to school. And I know it's June, but I promise you it's not a history.
History can be a good thing. Okay. It really can, especially when you have a storyteller like Mickey Herskowitz.
Yeah. What a great storyteller. And Steven, the Astros are 7 games under 500 as you and I record this on Tuesday, 7 back in the AL West. Can we write the obit on this team?
Well, we can. And let me tell you, I go back and forth on that on a daily basis, because as much as I want to believe that the Astros can turn things around, there is just so much up and down. I mean, every day you get bad news, it seems like. You know, you got Kyle Tucker day to day with a lower leg contusion. You've got, you know, sources saying bad news about Jose Urquidy, and, you know, Christian Javier is a bunch of questions up with him. So, you know, it just seems like the news gets worse and worse. But then you hear Luis Garcia throwing batting practice and a whole bunch of people attended and are cheering. It is a real difficult question to answer, Robert. But the one thing I will say, I'll come back to this. As dire as things look for the Astros right now, as long as the Seattle Mariners, who are leading the AL West right now, or someone else who may overtake them, as long as they don't get on a hot streak and leave everybody else behind, the Astros still have a shot. I mean, this is only June, and I know we keep saying this every month, but I believe they're what, you know, at the time we're recording this, I believe they're like 7 games out, and they're about the same distance out of the third and final wildcard spot. You know, we can't really compare the start of this team to the start of the 2005 team that went to the World Series because you didn't have that third wild card. I mean, they made a huge run toward the end to get there. You know, now that you have the third wild card, there's a little bit more of a chance this year. So I'm still going to hang on to that real tiny, tiny thread that there's still time. But I think, you know, the other question that comes up here, and it came up again today, you know, Dana Brown addressed it again, as he did last month. Are the Astros going to be buyers or sellers? And if you ask Dana Brown, you know, he still publicly says, no, we're not selling. We're still in this. Things are going to turn around. Well, the trade deadline's not until July 30th. So you've still got, about 6 weeks to figure that out. And I would say in another month, if the Astros are still treading water, or if they're even lower than they are now, you've got to at least start thinking about the possibility of selling off a few assets, if for no other reason, to get some really good prospects back, and maybe even a player. Pitching is obviously what they really need, but all the other teams are going through the same thing.
Look, when a team is as bad as the Astros have been in close games, they usually don't make the playoffs. So I'll start with that. But we keep saying, look at how easy the schedule is coming up, but they keep blowing it. Yet it's worth saying again, the next few series are the Cardinals, Angels, Giants, Tigers, and White Sox. It's a lot of garbage until June the 20th when they face the Orioles and Yankees in 2 of the next 3 series. And if they are still looking like garbage themselves, then I think we can make this official. I'll say, Steven, the pitching looks back to normal. Hunter and Arrigetti throwing up quality starts. Blanco is still doing Blanco stuff. The bullpen outside of Presley has settled down. So that's good.
Yeah, there are positives. And that's why I'm saying, I mean, it's not like it seems like it's all bad news if you just take a glance at the headlines each day. But if you go deeper, you are starting to see some signs of life. You know, I said early on about Arrigetti, you know, you're talking about a guy that's still, you know, he doesn't have a lot of minor league, well, triple A experience, certainly very limited. You're asking this guy to come up here and be a frontline starter, basically, or be a good starter right now. And that's just not realistic, at least at the beginning. You're starting to see better signs from him. Hunter Brown, you know, maybe he is starting to figure it out. Fromber, you know, he goes up, he goes down. You just don't know about him. But every good start that you get from him, you'll take it. Blanco, you know, he had a shaky start recently, but for the most part, and, you know, you take out the suspension, he's been the biggest surprise of the Astros pitching staff. So there are positive things to look at. And it is a very small thread that I'm hanging by, Robert, that they do have a chance, because you said it. When you lose that many one-run games, I mean, look, close is not close. Close only comes so much. It doesn't count in the standings. You're still behind. And typically, if you're going to lose that many games, it means that you're lacking one or two things to get you over the hump. And it's going to be that way all season. So I'm not ready to have a funeral of the Astros on this show, you know, where we have the music, you know, playing taps and pretending to have a coffin and burying the team season. Not ready to do that just yet, but I'm spending more time at the hospital. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't want to throw the dirt on the Astros grave, but I do want to throw dirt on Jose Abreu. Like, let's end this. I'm so tired of it, Steven. He's garbage. You know, he hit a home run the other day. So what? His at-bats typically are just terrible. He doesn't have it anymore. It's a waste of time. You can't, you know, just play him every other day, or some days he's playing and some days he's not. It doesn't do Singleton any good, and it doesn't do the team any good.
Well, clearly the Astros were in desperation mode when they approached him about this minor league thing, you know, going to the Florida Coast League. And if his struggles are that deep, I'm not sure how a month doing that was going to help him. And I know we talked about that on this show, but I honestly, Robert, I think the Astros are in desperation mode simply because they're paying him so much money. I mean, if this were John Singleton we're talking about, he would have already been jettisoned.
The money's gone. You can't bring the
money
back.
Well, the money's gone. I know, but he still has another year left after this year. So it just is coming to the point, and you're right. I'm not arguing with you about that, but I just think, you know, they're trying every scenario they can.
This is what crappy organizations do, is they go, okay, we screwed up. Let's double down on it. Let's keep trying to run it out there. Let's screw up the rest of the team. And the thing with Abreu is, it's not just that he's terrible at the plate. He gives you nothing when he's not playing. Well, not a good pinch hitter. Can't play multiple positions. Terrible at defense. Like, he's nothing. He is worthless on the bench.
Well, he's worthless on the bench. And, you know, it's one thing if his offense were stinking, but his defense was stellar. But all aspects of his game are struggling. And yeah, if you're trying to double down on a mistake you made, what you're actually doing is making yourself look worse, because you don't want to admit, you know what, we shouldn't have done this. So, you know, in their mind, the best way to try to sweep this under the rug is just to keep digging and keep digging, hoping that one of these days he'll suddenly get hot. And, you know, the end of last season and the postseason probably fooled them into thinking that, because, you know, he did have a better end of the year last year and he was pretty decent in the postseason. So, you know, they're probably going on that experience as, look, the guy must still have something. But I just think, Robert, at some point you got to cut your losses and move forward.
Like, dude, you paid for a bad tattoo. Don't show us the tattoo with your muscle shirt so we can see it on your shoulder all the time. Just wear long sleeves, get rid of it, or get to the point where we don't have to see it anymore. And that's what they should have done with Abreu. Urquidy, that story you mentioned it, Steven, he might have pitched his last game for the Astros, assuming he needs the Tommy John surgery. And I'm guessing it could be season ending for Javier, considering they're asking for a second opinion on him. Same deal. Steven, I'll keep reminding Astros fans, tired arms and pitching injuries are the price that you pay for an extra month of very stressful baseball for 7 straight years.
Well, I agree with you, but as I've said before, I think it goes even beyond that. I think it goes into the training in general, and because the Astros aren't the only team having this problem. I mean, this is a baseball-wide problem, not just MLB, but you're talking, you know, at the youth level, college level. But, you know, regarding Urquidy and Javier, you know, anytime that you hear a team say that they are seeking second opinions, it's not because the doctors are telling them, oh, just rest for about 10 days, you'll be fine. There's obviously something going on here. You know, you're not going to do that if you're thinking that you're going to come back in a week or two. So that in itself is troubling, even if you don't have any news coming out. And of course, you know, we're recording this, and as soon as we stop, there'll be a bulletin that comes across with official news. You know how that works. It already worked last week, Robert.
Yeah, I'm going to be shocked if it's not both guys are done for like over a year. Remember, they took a second opinion on Verlander. They wanted to wait. They waited an extra month. And maybe you, if they had done it a couple of months earlier, maybe Verlander would have been available for them in that 21 World Series, which of course he wasn't. Remember, he started pitching again right after the series was over with.
Yeah, he did. And that's what, you know, led to that. So I just think that you're putting yourself in quite a position when something like this happens. And with Urquidy, certainly, I just don't see him pitching another. You know, they've tried to trade him a couple different times in the past. And, you know, with his injury history, it's almost becoming a Lance McCullers situation. You know, it's too bad for both of those guys. You know, Javier especially would be a tough loss because you really were counting on him having a bounce back, a strong bounce back year this year. And that is not likely to happen at this point.
Message to Astros fans everywhere. And unfortunately, I see way too much on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, from Astros fans about this. The message is Espada, Crane, Dana Brown, and Bagwell did not destroy this team. Let me explain. Javier and Fromber look like aces in their prime 18 months ago. Verlander is Verlander. Garcia should be a solid fourth starter. Abreu and Hader should be in their prime as closers. Altuve is still Altuve. Tucker and Yordan were MVP-type candidates going into the year. One of them has been. One of them is just having a bad year so far. Bregman is a 29-year-old perennial all-star. That's what you thought you had with this lineup, along with Pena and Yonder, who showed flashes of being young stars. One of them still is showing those flashes. It doesn't take an all-star team to win a World Series. And, Steven, this is why everybody in sports says their run was historic in capital letters, historic. By the way, if this is an off year, it doesn't mean it's over. The 97-05 Astros run had a terrible season that first year at Minute Maid, and then they came back strong.
Well, and let's look at 2015 and 2016. You know, I mean, the Astros were bouncing back from those three dreadful years of quote-unquote rebuilding. I mean, 2014, they started showing some signs of life. 2015, they surprised everybody and made the playoffs. 2016, got off to a horrible start. Yeah, they got a strong finish, and they just missed making the playoffs. They, you know, they dug themselves in too deep of a hole. 2017 on, that's when the run started. So I'm not ready to write this team off completely. You know, maybe for this year, you know, we could talk about that and maybe not have too much of an argument. But yeah, there are too many guys here that you just talked about that you could sit here and say, oh, these guys are washed up. You can't put it on that. Now, if you have another year like this next year, then let's address it. But yeah, there are always going to be down years. And look, the Astros were due for one, weren't they? The historic is what you're talking about, and you're right. So you know that at some point it's going to happen because it just does. Look how bad the New England Patriots became after their run finally ended. You know, it's terrible. They've gone from first to last pretty much.
And so, but the Astros still, the thing is, the Astros, like, my point is, everybody wants to blame all these people. No, these guys were really darn good, you know, and you thought they were the future. But I just keep going back to the fact that, you know, guys are suffering injuries. Guys are in slumps because you have had so many years where you've had to play an extra month. And
that's
either tired or you get tired or you get hurt. And like, Steven, the history, look at it. Like, I can't say that enough. Go find me the team that had the Astros run since free agency. We have to go back to the Yankees of the 50s and the 60s to find anybody that did anything better than the Astros have done. And I don't even know if there's been an equal, you know, maybe the Braves.
Well, the Braves were probably the closest if you're talking about like in the 90s, you know, what they did in the 90s, that was pretty close. But, you know, even then they only won one World Series out of that.
Yeah.
And look, a lot of these guys you were talking about helped the Astros win at least one World Series. And in some cases, two World Series, you know.
Yeah,
especially
and I know the argument's going to be from some people. It's like, well, hey, these guys weren't on all seven teams, but even if they're on four of them, that's four extra months of baseball. Stressful, in real world terms, it's eight extra months of baseball in the last 4 years for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and then you throw in the World Baseball Classic last year, which, you know, I think affected some of the pitching. You know, you're talking about the deep playoff runs. Well, for some of these guys, you can go back as far as the World Baseball Classic. And yeah, it was during spring training, but let's be honest, these guys were ramped up and it was a much different routine than what they're used to. So no, I just can't say that all of these guys, they weren't mistakes because they won you World Series titles, whether they be all of them together or, you know, some of them came in the first, you know, cycle. Some of the others came in the second cycle. Some of them came in 2022 when they actually won it in 2022. So no, I think we're getting a little caught up in emotion here when you start talking about it. And certainly with Dana Brown, you know, the guy had been here long enough to say, well, he's done a terrible job. I mean, maybe this past offseason, you can criticize him for the Hader signing or maybe not addressing some of the other needs that probably needed more addressing, but he hasn't been here long enough to say that, oh, he's washed up. He can't do this job.
Are you talking about Dana Brown?
Dana Brown. Yeah, that's what I said. Dana Brown.
Yeah, you said washed up. And I was like, did I miss somebody?
Well, washed up in regard to just he's not a general manager, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, he's not washed up in GM years. But like, so, yeah, a couple of things that I want to mention about Joe Espada, because I was on an Astros Spaces, and what they said on there, you know, there was the talk about Dusty and Espada and so forth. And I think people, you know, there's a lot of people out there that like, oh, this wouldn't happen under Dusty. There's no way to know this, but can we at least say this much? You know, one thing that Dusty was able to do, the guy is a master psychologist. He is a master psychologist. I mean, he had 50 years of baseball experience, so many years as a manager. He has this presence. There's an it factor about Dusty Baker. Joe Espada doesn't have it yet, may never have that. Yeah, Dusty Baker, yeah, he was going to play Maldi over Yonner, and everybody was going to get upset about it. But the thing that Dusty might have been able to do is help guys when they go into slumps, talk guys through it, you know, keep the dugout happy. There's not typically guys going to reporters when Dusty Baker was manager griping about, you know, what's going on with the Astros. Now, what is that? That's the old chicken and the egg. Are they griping because they're bad? They're bad because, you know, Dusty never had to deal with some of this slumps, or is it because they're bad because Dusty figured out ways to get guys out of slumps? And that's the thing, Stephen, is, you know, the stuff that we don't know, I keep reminding people of this because I think it's important. In life, it's so much more of a mental game than anybody understands. And I have dealt with health issues. I know about it from that standpoint. I know about it from what I've studied about as far as just trying to make yourself well and what the mental stuff does. And having a real psychologist in Dusty Baker that was incredible at his craft at it. It does matter. When Bregman gets in that slump, maybe Dusty says something. Maybe he changes something up the way he's leading the team. Maybe he does something different. You don't know what he says to a pitcher when he walks out there, maybe to get somebody straightened out, whatever. I just think, Stephen, people underestimate that part of what Dusty Baker did.
Well, yeah. And why do you think Jim Crane brought Dusty in the first place? And if you're going to talk about Crane not making good moves, well, in this case, I think it was a brilliant move because remember when Dusty came in, I know he needed a manager because he fired AJ Hinch, but he fired AJ Hinch because of the cheating scandal. He brought in Dusty Baker as much to manage the team on the field as he did off the field and be a steadying hand through a situation that was still in flux. There was still a lot of talk going around, all kinds of things going on. Dusty, in my opinion, was as much a steadying presence, a steadying hand in that situation as anybody on the team, and got them through that whole situation from a lot of the things you just talked about, Robert, from a psychological standpoint. Now, let's not forget, and we've talked about it on this show before, probably ad nauseum, Dusty led teams to get close. He did finally lead the Astros to a World Series, but his record also indicates that the longer he stays with a team, it starts going backwards. So, yeah, we'll never know. Dusty's not managing this year. I think in Espada's case, you know, you want to root for the guy because he's tried so hard to get an opportunity. But, yeah, if you compare a guy like Dusty to someone like Joe Espada, you're talking about a guy who's still, even though he's been around the team for several years, he's been a bench coach, he still hasn't been in the manager's chair. He's still learning on the job. Well, unfortunately, you know, he's not on a team where you can afford to learn on the job because the expectations of winning are huge. So I think that's the position he's in, really. And it's not a good one. And you just, you know, you hope for the guy's sake that it turns around.
It's worth mentioning, all you people that hate Joe Espada right now, you guys are all 2020 hindsight, because I saw the post. About 95% of you wanted Dusty Baker gone.
That's right.
Nobody said, Joe Espada, what a terrible, I didn't see anybody like crying about Joe Espada getting hired.
No, and I mean, even some of the players, recommended him. And I think he does have a good rapport with the players, Robert. But as you said, there's a difference between rapport and just knowing how to manage when things are rough. And Joe's been around, most of the time, with the exception of 2020, it was a bad season. But again, the Astros still, made the playoffs and almost got to the World Series. But, Espada has been around the team for most of the time they've been successful. And it's just different having to manage for the first time when your team is struggling and you yourself are trying to figure out how to get out of this, much less tell players that, especially veterans like Alex Bregman and, younger guys like Yiner Diaz, how to get out of these things. So I just think he's in a very difficult position with all that's going on right now. And look, if the Astros were like where the Yankees are at the time we're recording this, I think they're what, 42-19. If the Astros were in the Yankees position, you wouldn't be hearing this. You think Joe Espada, man, he's a genius. He's doing even better than Dusty. So,
of course,
come on.
Of course not. Of course not. Of course not. I'm this is what's going on. So, it's not that Joe Espada can't be as good as Dusty Baker in 20 or 30 years, but, it typically just doesn't happen immediately. And, Dusty is a special personality. And whether you guys understand it that watch the Astros games or not, but just go read stories about the guy if you forget. Oh, yeah. I mean, we talked about it on the show.
Think about all the celebrities that know him and hang out with him, especially when they won the World Series. I mean, it seemed like Dusty knew everybody.
Yeah, I figured people paid attention to what was going on with these stories about, what the players said and how much they loved him and how much they wanted to win it for Dusty. And we saw all the coaches jump on him that were so happy that he finally won a World Series after that 2022 final out and the whole thing. So it's like, we knew that this guy was special. If you didn't know, you weren't paying attention. That's all. You definitely weren't listening to us. I mean, we tried to keep it balanced on
we
that.
Did. We criticized Dusty when we felt he needed it, but we also gave him praise when we felt he needed it.
And the thing that we can't know, nobody can know, is the stuff that he's doing psychologically with the team and stuff like that. In baseball, it's probably the most important sport as a manager, head coach type sport that you need that person. And it's the most important thing because, a lot of the other sports, it's a lot of like, well, we can do analytics or we can, whatever, but it's probably more a mental game than any sport that I can think of. I mean, it's hitting a baseball coming at you at 100 miles an hour or trying to get it past somebody, that's trying to hit it straight back at you and knock your head off. So it's very much this mental sport that, it's tough. And so what he did was important, but that's all we got for this one. And keep an eye out. No other shows planned this week at this point, but just subscribe because we might pop something up later this week. So keep an eye out and hopefully Yordan and Bregman can keep it going, keep that hitting going and get the Astros rolling here in the next week. Hopefully we'll have some good stuff to talk about, but thanks a bunch, everybody.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.